From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 404, Web Performance with guest Scott Forsyth. Recorded Friday, January 16th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Hey, it's show 404, so we got to do something webby. And with me today is Scott Forsyth, who's the co-founder of VastNet and an IT consultant for the Microsoft Web Platform. And he's been a recipient of the Microsoft Most Valuable Professional, that's the MVP award, for I think 11 years now, switching between ASP.NET, IIS, and now the combined IIS, ASP.NET discipline. And he's the co-author of Professional IIS 7 and Professional IIS 8, a plural site author, and working on a course around URL rewrite, which I suspect, because this bio is probably a year old, is done.
Right. That is. And I'm now working on the IIS fundamentals.
Awesome.
Plural site course.
Yeah. The plural site guys are great guys. I'm a big fan. And boy, those videos are compelling.
Yeah, they really are. And they have a great organization, the way they've been setting things up. It's pretty impressive.
It makes it fun to actually just get things done with them and get stuff out the door. And people, you know, more people watch your videos, the more you make and the more you can do more of them.
Right. Can't go wrong.
So has that been your focus, is Pluralsight these days?
No, I haven't been able to put as much time into that as I'd like to. I've been doing a lot more of the consulting. One primary gig is Dynamic Web USA.
Right.
And it's a CMS platform focusing on the mid-market. And so, in fact, we're doing some more of the dynamics, nav and AX a little bit, at least the integration part of that, and building up some corporate websites.
Oh, interesting. So this is being a certified software advisor for Dynamics?
No, not certified.
Okay.
So I pull in some other people, but I coordinate everything, and I do get my hands a certain amount dirty on that.
Oh, wow.
Working with CAL and nav and X++. And AX is kind of fun getting into those different environments.
Yeah, it's a really interesting space that I think a lot of folks aren't particularly aware of. And then now more and more, our job's just to glue these parts together so the workflows make sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, fun stuff. And so, I guess IIS is still the center of your world a lot of the times.
It is. Yeah. So there's a web that, and then another one still IIS related is the Microsoft project a lot of people aren't aware of. It's called a Service Gateway. It's a project that Microsoft's been working on, a team there, and it's right now it's on sg.coplex.com, and it's almost like a load balancer using the ARR, the application routing technology.
Oh, wow.
And using that, and so one of my roles is to help consulting and working on that. I've been doing the regular expression part of the rules. It's been a lot of fun. Some of those are kind of mind-boggling and a lot of fun to work with.
What's the Service Gateway really all about?
Well, it's a little bit different market, and it's stemmed from the Bing team and some of these large teams within Microsoft, and they were able to grab some of the initial code and starting to stem off from that. And the idea is to use one domain, let's say Microsoft.com, and you pull in these various different entities, or they call them flights. So you pull in Bing and search and forums and various different parts there. And so the subparts of the domain are pulled in from different, completely different web farms, server farms, and pulled into one cohesive domain name. And then as it takes it through, it's rewriting all the URLs to make it a subfolder deeper than it is initially. And there's doing some changes there. There's some authentication that it's able to handle up front and make sure that depending on who you are, it can send you off to different server farms.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting. And this stuff's all open source, living on CodePlex?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. And I wonder if it's going to be moving over to GitHub, which it seems like a lot of projects are doing for CodePlex these days.
Yeah.
But
a good chance of it.
Yeah. But this is cool because I guess it's, so you look at this as something that a company would use as a portal point.
Yeah, it becomes the gateway. It's really like a load balancer, but it's working. And if you have multiple entities that you want to pull into that one domain,
right.
And I'm not sure if it works for everyone yet, but as they start to expand it more, they have a more generic Because what is also nice about it, just uses standard JSON for the configuration.
Nice.
And there is a portal to do it. So you can do basically your load balancer configured with some JSON files. And you can direct where it goes. And each one of those can point to their own load balancer, or you can point to individual servers as needed to pull it all together into one cohesive site.
That's really interesting. So, yeah, this is one of those plumbing pieces that you don't think you need until you have a bunch of users and a bunch of apps and you're struggling to figure out where people need to go.
Right.
Well, just knowing where the pressure is coming from, like I find, you know, detail monitoring outside of the cloud, because I think Azure does a pretty good job of this, but trying to do detail monitoring internally, it's just not that easy to do.
No, it isn't. And one of the battles with this project is the ARR. And how do you get the logging from the various different nodes when you flight them off to the different servers?
Right.
And you want to have on your central server, you want to have all the stats. You know, which server farm do we send it off to? Mm-hmm. Which node on that server farm do we send it off to? And pull all of those into a single log file.
Yeah. Did it actually get there? Did the guy get working? Like, that handoff part, that's tricky. You just redirect them and you hope for the best.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So actually, we're still working through some of those because the ARR is not as extensible. So there's some tricky aspects to it, but it is possible. And actually, that's one of the projects we're working on right now is to 100% log in all the way through.
Yeah, actually have a clear attitude towards flow. How much of your work you find these days is more cloud-centric versus on-prem?
Well, that's a good question. I probably do not fit with a lot of people. There's a lot of people moving to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just whatever the clients, the accounts that I've been working with haven't as much.
Right.
So I do a bunch of Azure machines, a bunch of AWS machines. But for the most part, most of the things are still on-prem for what I've been working with. I don't think that necessarily represents where the industry is going, but it happens to be what I've been doing.
We're both enterprise guys and most of my customers are on-prem and looking at cloud on the periphery. And mostly, software as a service offerings. Let's stop doing CRM internally. I want to use Salesforce or what is Office 365 or stop running mail, and, push that out. But a lot of the core functionality, whether it's regulatory, because I'm in banking most of the time, or some other constraining rule set, they're just the cloud for the core is just not an option for them yet.
No, I did a really big project up in Canada in Ontario about a year ago. And so I went up and spent a week just kind of consulting, looking at the environment. Actually, it was the second week. They called me back for a second week and just really dug in deep. And we did a whole bunch of projections on moving to Azure. Would it make sense as they scale their company? And they acquired a bunch of different companies and we're doing quite a bit of large scale growth and we're running into pain points on performance. And so they're saying, well, Azure seems to make sense. They pulled in the Microsoft account reps. We sat down for a couple hours during this process and tested it really well, but in the end decided not to go for it.
Hmm.
One of the main issues is the SQL performance.
Right.
You either have to move it all there. Otherwise, there's just too much latency to have SQL at a different place in your web servers. And there's too much rewriting, too much change in your application to be able to have them living in different locations. So you have to do all or nothing. It's pretty hard to offload some of it.
So for that customer, was the problem we're not prepared to put our data up in the cloud as well?
Part of it, yeah. And they had some regulatory issues with some of that. And it just didn't make sense to move it all there. Now they are planning. What they've done is the data centers that they've been moving to are ones that are right up against the Microsoft Azure and another cloud provider. So if they do want to, they have major 10 gig network connectivity between the public cloud and their own database servers that they want to be able to manage. It just was not affordable. They have some monster database servers.
Right.
And it wasn't affordable to put them out in the cloud at least the pricing a year ago. That's going to start to get more affordable over time, but it was not yet. And that was one of the big limitations.
Yeah, it's an interesting set of movements. It's just trying to figure out where those things go. And I can't tell you how many times, you remember the old days of when people were complaining about websites being slow, it's like, just throw more servers at it, right? Like, it's just not a big deal. I push this button, more servers appear, everything will be fine. Today, the equivalent of that is, well, I'll just put it in the cloud. It'll be fine.
Right.
And it's never that simple. Like, actually making stuff go fast is complicated. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yep. Yeah, one thing is a bottleneck or another one, then you get into caching. If it's not the database server, it's caching or, the web servers can usually scale, no problem. But you have so many other dependencies there that really hold everything else back.
Yeah, given you haven't done terrible stateful things in your web servers, we could probably scale them.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, many of these have been around for years.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy, you know, so you have a new startup. Well, they plan it right. They mm-hmm. know what the technologies are. Everything from day one is built around this. Well, they can scale no problem. It's a sweet configuration going with any of these, you know, cloud providers.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work with a lot of these legacy ones. There's just too much to change.
I mean, that's an interesting truth that if you start with a cloud environment when you're building a website, they pretty much force you down the scalable path. They won't let you mm-hmm. do evil things.
Right.
You know, you can't write to disk. You can't store state in the web server. Like, you have to do that right on the outset, which means if you do scale, it's not a big deal. I mean, the argument right. I've always had working with devs on this is like, we'll worry about that later. Let's just get the version out, which even from a business perspective, it's not an unreasonable thing to just say, hey, don't worry about those details. Let's scale when we need to scale. Right now, you know, it's more important to ship features enough to get some customer traction.
Yeah. And I'd say 98% of the time, that's fine.
Right.
A lot of people don't scale beyond a couple nodes.
Yeah.
You know, they're happy as can be and it works great. But when you do get really big, then you have to do a little bit of refactoring on everything.
Right. Although it's interesting to see the attachments around sites these days. I don't know. Have you done much with modern CDNs? You know?
Right. I've been torn on that. Just a little bit. And I've sat down in a lot of discussions. Do we move to a CDN or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so many times I just haven't found the value. Because what they're offloading are things that you can stream so performant
right.
yourselves.
These weren't the slow parts of the site.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I can see it making perfect sense for WindowsUpdate.com
right.
or huge videos.
Yes.
That makes perfect sense. But for the average site that's offloading some images, well, the images are using, they're not the problem, like
yeah.
you said.
Yeah, they're not actually the problem. Although I'm finding the entry, you can experiment with a CDN pretty painlessly now. You know, it's not all mm-hmm. Akamai anymore. There are smaller guys out there that have got nice little plugins, so it's easy to drop it in and give it a spin and just see,
right.
does this make a difference to us or not? You get it just yeah. to get a little bit of offload. Sometimes just getting some breathing room.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it does benefit that. And then the other nice benefit is when your servers are slow, it's nice for all the images to continue to work well and all your yeah. other dependencies.
Well, and the other aspect of CDN is that geolocation effect. Just be, hey, you know, the page
right.
may take a while to fetch from the other side of the world, but all of these other resource files are nearby.
They're just right there.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and the rates have gotten way better. You know, it used to be, you know, I'm just showing my age. During the dot-com boom, when we wanted to use Akamai, like if you weren't coming to the table with $100,000 a month, it wasn't
right.
worth it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and today it's I helped set up a max CDN setup for a small site, and I think we're spending $10 a month.
Wow.
Yeah. yeah.
That's completely affordable. You could just experiment with that, no problem,
right.
and see how that benefits.
Yeah. And then that was for like 100 gigs worth of transfer per month. And if you need more than that, you bought them in terabyte chunks for $75 a piece. Like it's a different land, my friend. Like I'm kind of staggered as to all the options mm-hmm. we have for web performance. And CDNs still feel archaic beside the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean by that?
Just that, you know, CDN's the old school technology for just offloading pieces of work, where the
right.
cloud's got this more comprehensive offering. I mean, Microsoft's sort of offering CDN pieces inside of Azure these days as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you keep watching the new releases. Both AWS did for forever.
Right.
And now Azure is just releasing something. Every new newsletter, there's just so many new features being added to it.
I think it's overwhelming. Like, you just can't get your head around what's in the offering now. Does this help me or not?
Right. Yeah, you're watching all the new icons appear on the side and don't even know what that is yet.
yeah, if you've even gotten far enough to understand what that console, I love that console. Most of the time when I'm showing someone Azure for the first time, they just see the console and go, oh, I need more of that.
But right, it is, whatever it is, I want it.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a view of your systems that most people don't see in terms of just mm-hmm. understanding where your performance problems, your functional problems lie.
Mm-hmm.
I still run into a lot of folks complaining about web performance, and they're going at the dev, not at the, you know, the IT guys, like, you built crappy code. Do you run into that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, where are folks actually focused when it comes to web performance problems?
Well, usually it's the IT pro that can make the quick fix.
Right.
And it's the dev that needs to make the longer term fix.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can usually throw some hardware on it for a little bit, but eventually it just becomes too cost ineffective to keep throwing hardware, or you get the bottleneck. You know, you can't scale up the SQL Server past a certain point. It just becomes too expensive or difficult to shard that out or to change it. And, but yeah, so the dev team is usually the ones that need to do something long term. And even if you come back to caching, you have to pull the dev team back in.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's, I mean, that's why you've seen this bigger move towards the IT pro, getting both working together.
Well, we want this happy red button where you hit it and just goes faster. But, my other question there is, as always, is it the IT guy who has the numbers? Like, he's running the operations. Does he have the better metrics to actually know what goes fast and what goes slow?
I think it is. I think the IT pro is the one that can help with a lot of that troubleshooting. And then they have to go back and say, well, here it is. This new code release you had is now all of a sudden the CPU and the machines, whether they do it through QA properly or whether they realize it in production. As ever, you know, CPU just went up 20% on all of our servers. You know, what did you just change?
Well, I'm finding it harder and harder to do testing outside of production on websites that's meaningful, that I trust those tests. They actually look like production. And, you know, you're showing a 10% performance gain in the test. Do I see that in production?
Right. Now, I've watched your tech ed sessions on that. It's pretty impressive what you do. So what's the difficulty there? Just being able to get the simulated traffic that represents the real life. Is that the biggest difficulty?
Yeah, I cannot tell you how many hours I have spent constructing, testing, load testing scenarios that look like production. I ream through logs and use all kinds of tools to sort of extract, here's a pattern of behavior. You know, this guy goes, he looks at a dozen different product pages, he puts six of them in his cart, and then he checks out, or he abandons. You know, you work through that and the mixture of scenarios. But humans are weirder than load test tools. Like, they just do stuff you wouldn't imagine. And they get angry. The funny part is their behavior gets more erratic as the site gets slower. So they compound the problem substantially, where, you know, I've actually done focus group testing. So I've got a camera on this guy using the site. And when it was fast, he was doing what you'd think. He had a page open. He's going place, 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 place. And as the site slowed down, he opened more windows and more windows and more windows.
Right.
So, you know, we're already struggling and you're beating the snot out of us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The worst get worse. And it just.
Well, and part of that was this, you know, this is, you've seen this. Under load, there's a fall off curve, right? There's a point where the system takes the load, you know, maybe it slows down a little bit as the load goes up, and then all of a sudden it trips over a line where the number of pages getting served drops off dramatically and the backlog grows dramatically and nobody's getting anything. And, and I think, you know, part of this is in real life, humans stimulate that sooner than nice, smooth load tests do.
Right. Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. So sometimes you go through the logs and try to replay those logs, but that's so hard to capture too.
Yeah.
Especially with GET requests and POST requests and how much data are you going to be throwing in your tests and everything else. It's very difficult to do. It's not an easy task.
And modern web pages today their calling structures are even more complex. It's harder and harder. You know, the WC3 log doesn't have the whole truth anymore. You know, it's arguably it never did. But you know, more and more, it's getting harder to understand what the app was actually doing.
You're saying because you're going out to the web services, and that's on a whole different server, and you're doing a web service call to a third party, and then everything there is completely detached.
Right.
Right.
You can't count on all of the traffic on a given page coming through a given web server anymore.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. No, that's so true.
Yeah.
Especially with, and then of course you add on the CDNs.
Yep. Throw CDN, throw some external calls in. It's like, how am I going to recreate this?
Right.
For sure. Hey, I got to pay the bills here. Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment, from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan configurations of every node in your environment, no matter what the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, or at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. Are you doing any production level instrumentation? Do you play with tools like Data Dynamics or preemptive analytics, you know, those kinds of things in instrument production?
Right. I don't do a lot myself. I've worked with some accounts that I've steered them in that direction. And actually one of them in particular has just done so good right now. Now everything before it goes out to production goes through a QA. They have some metrics on it. There's no way that something goes out and it's going to hurt the a server, at least unless something sneaks through. As you mentioned, there's so many things to consider.
Right.
So, but I haven't got my hands too dirty on that. I've played with different things over the years. But I haven't been doing that too actively in times past.
And it's one of the traps you get into, right? It's like you're tuning your code, you're measuring your servers. Your average response time is 100 milliseconds. Like your page, everything you're doing is rocking and the customer is furious because the page is taking 30 seconds to load. But you weren't looking at page load times, you're looking at your service times. And it's this crappy ad network you're using that's actually slowing the whole page down.
Yeah.
Or you stuck Google Analytics in the header. And that took 10 seconds.
Right.
You know, sometimes. Yeah.
And you're getting more dependencies on these pages. And now what it is, it's any one of those are slow if you have the page set up wrong and everything is slow.
Yeah.
You know, we had one page recently that's doing a web service call off to the blog and just to their own blog to pull in the blog feed. And it wasn't written in a way that was asynchronous. And so then the whole page all of a sudden got really slow when the blog was struggling.
Right. And you want to know before the people complain that what this page speed time is. I think that's the big argument for production instrumentation, at least instrumenting the browser. So the browser is telling you page render times in a separate instrumentation pack of some kind. How are you logging how long it took to render the page? I mean, you could do it yourself. I wrote that code 20 years ago that just would request a blank image on the page with a query string that said, this is how long it took the page to render. So that I had an entry in the WC3 log for every page that was, this is when doc loaded actually fired. So it was kind of a magic number, right? That this is how long it's actually taking the browser to think it's done. You know, not what you think, you know, when you sent stuff, but when the browser thought it was done.
Right. So you've been doing that for years, starting with just parsing the log files.
Yeah, well, it's all we had back in the day, you know.
Yeah.
I think IIS3.
Wow. Right?
And IE3.
I jumped on board in IS5.
Oh, man.
And yeah, and so I was using Apache actually prior to then. that's going back a long way.
I think we're just old. And I'm still fighting the same problems of even then we believed if we just throw more Pentium Pros at it, it'll go faster. And now it's like if we just chuck it into the cloud, it'll go faster. It's just
I had an issue just a couple weeks ago. One of my clients, longtime clients, called me up and says, Scott, help us with, we got an issue here with performance. And this is, believe it or not, they're still developing active development in classic ASP.
Awesome.
And yeah, they love it still. And they've been using it forever. And the issue happened to be the thread count because they're doing a web service call off to their search server. Their requests are only about 3/4 of a second, but they're limited to 100 threads, max of 100 threads. And they're using all of them up because it's using the old XML, HTTP XML, and which was STA, single threaded, single apartment threaded.
Yes.
And or single, what is that?
Single threaded apartments.
Yeah. So they ran into a bottleneck there and the CPU on the machine was idle, real powerful machines. RAM was idle. There was hardly used at all. And it just ran into this bottleneck. And eventually they were able to, we went in and we extended that. And actually that was a pretty tricky issue to troubleshoot because your IIS system.web server has a processor thread max.
Yep.
But the registry has a thread max.
Yep.
Each of those set to 100. And if you change either, it didn't do anything. You had to change one of them to unlimited. Yeah. And there's no documentation cross-linking them.
Oh, no.
So it took us a little bit. Actually, I pulled in the IIS team. I said, how come we can't break past this 100?
Yeah. I've changed. I'm sure you changed the one number, the max thread number. Mm-hmm. No problem. But you didn't get more threads. And you're like, what's going on?
Yeah. We came back and we changed the other one. Didn't get any threads because we cleaned up after each test.
Sure.
Put the other back.
Right? You're being a responsible tester. If it doesn't change anything, set it back.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so eventually, we troubleshooted. Finally, we realized you set one to unlimited and then you can control it however you want. And then they're able to raise that thread count and that worked much better. Then all of a sudden you could see the CPU being used on the machine and they're able to handle a lot more. And their issue, of course, is classic ASP. They weren't easily able to offload the session state and they were dependent on session state. So they could scale out servers, but they couldn't scale out the worker processes within each individual server.
No.
Because they're using sticky sessions per server, but you don't have that within the server.
Yeah.
So they could throw more servers at it, are really low servers, but they couldn't throw a bunch of big heavy servers at it.
Well, and that's what will frustrate you. So you got this muscular machine that's laying around doing nothing, but you can't put more work into it.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened there.
Well, and you start to understand why the thread count rules have completely changed in modern architectures now. Hardwiring those thread counts makes no sense. Processes are way faster. The rules are different.
Right, because, the CPU has far outpaced the thread count.
Sure.
Before, 100 made a lot of sense. Now, 100 makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally meaningless. But you know, and you're mixing modern hardware and old architectures, you're going to run into these kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, really a fun problem to deal with. I have fond memories of ASP, but I think it's mostly because I don't do it anymore, and I just have to keep it as memories.
Right. But, well, it's kind of a pain when you go back to it. It is enjoyable, especially if you have a few minutes to work on it and you can, you don't have too many things on your shoulders that you're worried about. But it's a little bit difficult sometimes because you start to forget over time. I mean, we're talking, pre-2000 when this was at its heyday, right? So I'm like, okay, just like, what was the setting here? How does it work in this way? And you have to try to pull back those old memories, or you're working with OIS 7 and greater has changed a lot of these. And I've worked with a minimal amount of classic ASP since then. So again, you're working with the new hardware. You're working with a new web platform with an old technology, and the buttons are different. The levers are different between them.
Well, and no inclination to migrate the code?
No, that's not my call. So I step in and help them from the IT pro. Actually, I do step in and help them some of the coding as well. Mm-hmm. But they've been doing that forever. And far as I can tell, they're happy. The team that's been doing it has been there for a long time. So it really depends on where their expertise is. And they just haven't had the desire to move off classic ASP.
Well, and it's, you just fixed another problem. So why would they? The app clearly mm-hmm. works. It's in demand right. enough that you needed more threads.
Yeah. Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. I think that's a big piece of the conversation, right? If you talk about a cultural difference between a developer audience and an IT audience, often that's one of them. It's like devs like new tools even more than IT pro folks work. IT folks like reliable tools. If this stuff works, I like it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think you're right.
Yeah. It's an interesting cultural dynamic. Instrumenting that ASP site would be very challenging. To have any sense of what's going on where. I think mm-hmm. your explanation of that scenario skipped a really hard problem, which was figuring out that it was the thread count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to use debug diag and, of course, perfmon to find out initially what's happening. And it takes a little bit of troubleshooting. The first little bit to find out, you start realizing, okay, well, it's not obviously not CPU and memory.
Yeah.
It's not disk. So what is it? And so you start to pull up perfmon and start to collect a lot of different counters. And okay, hey, here's what happens. And of course, what makes this even worse is it only happens once a week.
Oh, of course. Yeah, peak times.
Right? Yeah, peak time or yeah, sometimes peak times and sometimes a surprise time depending on what happens there. And that's, so then you can't really track it and you have to wait till the next time it occurs. And of course, then everyone's, all rushed. Hey, we need to get this fixed right now. We can't, we can't take 10 minutes to try to figure out what that is.
Right.
Let's fix it now and try to diagnose it afterwards. And that's pretty difficult to do in the log sometimes. And yeah, but then you go through debug diag is so good, especially with classic ASP. That was one thing it did a very good job at. And you can tell which thread is doing what and what it's held up on. And
yeah, I haven't thought about debug diag in a long time. What else do you use it for?
Yeah, it's basically the performance and crashes. It is really good to attach to upcoming crash. And you can say, I want to have it on this thread. And before it crashes and completely disposes of that process, it will dump it to memory.
Right.
And then afterwards, you can go and diagnose and really dig into it.
So when you have a reproducible cache, you could, because debug diag significantly loads down the machine. Like you don't just toss it around on production machines willy-nilly.
Well, it generally will just take a snapshot at that point.
Right.
So yeah, it nails it for, in fact, you can even lock your worker process. But if everyone's impacted anyways, you don't mind if there's 1 minute where everything's held up. You kind of have to do that. And then it takes that 1 minute, it dumps it to disk, and then you can copy everything off server and work on it off server. So it's not too bad. And when it just listens there and waits for either whatever threshold sometimes you trigger it manually. Mm-hmm. That's most often, that's all you do. You're troubleshooting one off.
Yeah.
But if you set it up to trigger based on certain events that occur, that performance overhead's almost nil there. So that's not too big of a deal.
That's nice. And a great tool. And one of the ones I don't think that many people necessarily know about either, but.
No, one of those hidden ones.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft makes all these free tools and they just don't promote them very well. Mm-hmm. Like you need to know it's there, but definitely a great tool when you have a reproducible crash. I do this and this and this, and then boom, to be able to turn on debug diag, do your sequence and get the snapshot.
Yeah, and it's a lifesaver in those situations. So, you know, you don't want to do it at first. It takes a little bit. A new environment, you have to download it, install, get it all set up, try to catch it when the issue occurs. So it's not usually the first step you do when you're troubleshooting. But when you start to exhaust some of these other options, then you pull out the trusty debug diag, and it does a good job.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you're showing your old school chops there, Scott. Yeah. Like, going back to those. Any other trusty tools for you?
Oh, good question. FileMon or ProcessMon is a favorite.
Oh, yes. All of Rusinovich's gadgets, you know?
Yeah.
They are must-haves.
Yeah, exactly. Process Explorer, the whole set.
Yeah.
And they're really good. Record Log Parser is so great to do anything diagnosed after the fact. And that works really good. And then IIS itself is doing a little bit better, able to dig into the working processes, the pages that are running in flight at that moment since IIS 7. And with failed request tracing, that's so nice. We didn't have that before. And of course, PerfMon, Event Viewer, really a lot of the environments I step into aren't my environments.
Right.
So I don't have my tool set already preloaded. And there's a certain amount of barrier to install them, especially the licensed ones. And so for the most part, I try to make do with the products that are right there, apart from, Mark's set of tools there, the sys internals. And in that case, I do use them. They're well worth installing. Actually, they're not really install rate.
Yeah.
They're well worth running.
And you say that's one of the nice things about the free tools is nobody's going to hesitate to that. But yeah, plenty of IT folks out there is like, you do not put more stuff on my servers. I have enough problems.
Right.
I don't want more things to be worried about.
And you have to be careful. You do, anytime I do an install, Wireshark's another big one.
Yep.
But anytime you do an install, I always make sure, okay, I'm going to install this on the server, but this is one that I feel is fine on a production server when you're troubleshooting something like this.
Yeah.
It's been well tested. But you have to be careful. You can't just experiment on someone else's environment with, some new tool that you haven't used yet.
Right. Well, rule number one of diagnostic work, don't make the situation worse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How many times have we gone down the wrong path and been dismantling and doing things before you discover, it was actually over here. Now we have to undo all of these things just to get back to what the real problem was.
Yep. That's happened too many times. The compounded issues, those are the worst ones. And, there's two different issues and then you introduce a third one.
Yep.
And then as you start to backtrack on it, all of a sudden yours is the one that becomes the new cause.
Yeah. That's actually the real issue.
Right. Try to avoid that as much as possible, but sometimes it gets you.
Well, I think it's also a personality thing of not getting wound up in a crisis like this when people are freaking out and making sure we're making things better, not worse, taking time, doing the right thing, and really thinking about what's going on before you make any moves.
Right. You do have to be really careful. And that is a big thing. And every once in a while, you forget to save a configuration. You go in and you make a change and you need to know, if I'm going to make these four changes, I need to be able to pull back on all four of those changes predictably.
Yeah.
And, make sure you get your backup before you start working. And the once in a blue moon, you forget, you really kick yourself.
That's the one.
Oh, forgot. Yeah. That's the one that
I needed where you're like, I need to go back. I didn't take a checkpoint. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, you get better over time. It's just like forgetting to save. Remember back in the day, you still do. Of course, there's so much auto saves nowadays, but you forget to save and you have 8 hours invested into your old program. And that's the worst thing.
Well, and I admit that I'm not as disciplined as I could be on a lot of stuff. Not that I'm in the firefight most of the time, but the guys I've known that were really great at it, they were checklist guys. So you didn't remember during the crisis. They had it written out. And you went down the checklist every time you made any action.
Yeah.
There's a reason why pilots and surgeons and all these guys do checklists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't make that mistake when you're flying a plane.
Nope. Yeah. And so, take a hint from the best. There's these mechanisms, they really do help you have better results during a crisis. You don't have to count on your own instincts all the time.
Yeah. And especially, it makes a big difference if you're by yourself, but especially when you're in a team, You just need to know, you can trust, where was that? Who made the change? What change did they did? Was it done in a predictable way? And what happened? Was there a checkpoint? You know, all those checklists that you're talking about are so essential.
Yeah, without a doubt. Scott, it is always fun to chat with you. We end up going down memory lane most of the time. But I really appreciate you coming out for 404.
Sure thing, Richard.
I'm pretty sure we found a page, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, awesome.
Didn't hit our 404 during the conversation, but it's all about 404, right?
So where are we going to see you next? Well, obviously, another Pluralsight video coming. Are you doing any speaking?
Yeah. Let's see. I don't have anything scheduled at the moment, and I didn't submit anything for, Ignite this year. And so, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The next thing for sure is the Microsoft conference, but that's quite a ways out. I'm going to be up in Denmark for an internal tech conference for our own company,
nice.
Dynamic Web, and that's the end of February. But nothing public that's currently scheduled, but I'll look forward to something soon.
Well, you should get something into Ignite, I think.
Yeah, I should. It's been a couple years
since
I have, and I'm missing it. It's one of my favorite conferences. It's kind of general topics.
Yes.
But I do enjoy the momentum. I do enjoy a lot.
Well, and it's going to be different this year, so it's really interesting to see what it's going to be like.
Yeah, and I haven't been in Chicago, any of the conferences there. Oh, so
there you go.
Yeah, it'll be my first one.
Scott Forth, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.